Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
Your city, your mayor. Tony and Melissa in the morning with Mayor Joe Gannon, WICC 600.
All right, the mayor is here for his weekly visit. Mayor Gannon, how are you today, sir?
Doing really well. How about yourself?
We're all doing pretty good. How you doing, Melissa?
You got to tell everybody I called in 3 minutes ago.
I know.
I said to Tony, I go, why would you tell the mayor to call you back? He's too early because he's going to be late, and I knew it.
I was only kidding. You're always at least 2 or 3 minutes late, and you were 3 minutes early. I says, oh, Mayor, you're way too early. You got to call back, and he hung up on me.
Well, you told him to call back. Oh, Mayor Gannon, I'm so sorry.
Very, very funny. All right, my friend. Mayor Gannon, you're out on the campaign trail. You're telling voters that you're going to lessen their tax burden if reelected. You say you've got a plan. Is there any way you could let us in on it?
It's a good point in time. You know, we came in 4 years ago with a goal towards starting to reduce taxes and get hit with a huge deficit and revaluation. Tried to explain that to people, and people have been very forgiving on that. But what's happened since then, I think, is the good news. We've held the line every year. And as mayor, I've held the line almost every year, being mayor for almost 15 years. So that's the good news. Then we cut them slightly this past year. We actually cut taxes for the first time they've been cut in the city of Bridgeport in a dozen years. And with this recent, not only refinancing of pensions, but reduction in health care costs, my finance directors told me we can commit to another tax cut next year. So I'll say it again, another tax cut next year. And with a new level and cooperation, a new level of accountability and cooperation with the Board of Ed, with the new superintendent, we are committing, and I've talked to the city council about this, more resources, more funding to our schools to help reduce classroom size, you know, student-teacher ratios. That's a critical element of it. And working on metrics, not only graduation rates, percentage of students that go on to college, and the reducing the dropout rates is elements of what we're going to look for, in addition to one of the largest school capital improvement programs the city's seen in, I don't know, maybe in 20 years. So education, funding for education with accountability, and a second tax cut, and then continue to fight to reduce the mill rate, our priorities along with public safety. So I'm comfortable now after 3 years of cleaning up a mess, part of the mess, you know, with budgets, part of the mess in some city departments that were moving ahead, and I'm able to talk with confidence to people about that. So I feel good about that, and hope people recognize it's a good point in time. And we've had $1 billion of growth in the grant list, so that also helps us with funding. So good stuff going on, still challenges, but good stuff going on. I hope people understand that.
But you will understand, obviously, Mayor, that it's understandable if people are, of course, worried about if that tax cut will happen, because you obviously made it happen this year, which was amazing. But it was not easy to do that. Are you confident that the city will get behind another tax cut? And is it as possible? I mean, everything you just said sounds great. But is it as possible as people may not think it is?
And I think it's important to ask that question. But over the last 3 years, we've seen more than $1 billion in investment in the city of Bridgeport. One investment alone was $550 million on clean energy. But other things, Steel Point and other projects coming on. So what that does is that grows the grant list. When you grow the grant list, they have more, I hate to put it this bluntly, more property comes on the tax rolls. So that spreads out the burden. And when it spreads it out beyond residential homeowners, then it allows us that base. And then when we've done things like taken advantage of, you know, we're lower interest rates with some of the city financing, we cutting them in half, saving tens of millions of dollars, and then converting, I know this sounds like gobbledygook, but converting the city's health care, you know, which is the cost of health care that everybody has to pay, into a plan that reduced us and the Board of Ed $5 million on each side. You're looking at the areas where we've made commitments now and say, we do have money that we can help reduce taxes in the city of Bridgeport. It'll be the second year in a row. I think credibility lies in the fact that we cut them this year. And with a commitment on accountability, more money for education. I hear that at the doors. We want to follow through on that. It's something I care deeply about as much as reducing the cost of living in the city of Bridgeport with taxes and public safety.
And Mayor, we do have to break for traffic, but I just want to let you know, if you can stick around, I do want to talk to you about the Majestic Theater. I think that's a really exciting project that I know we got an announcement from your office yesterday. Are you able to hold on the lines? We could talk about it?
Of course.
And we're getting back to the conversation after talking about taxes. Let's kind of switch gears a little bit. We saw reports that the Majestic Theater, which has been vacant for decades now, very historic theater right here on Main Street in Bridgeport, it's getting new life, and it's really exciting stuff, Mayor. Can you let us in on the plans?
Sure. We were in there yesterday looking at the work that's begun. part of that is, you know, this non-glamorous kind of remediation or removal of environmental issues. But the work's begun. Bottom line is the work has begun. The investor, Exact Capital, is investing money to start the progress on the Polion Majestic Theater. So the talk is the talk, but the action is the action. This is some of the action. And I will tell you, played out, not only is it going to have, again, we'll wait for these announcements as they come out, but a hotel on the top floor. The renovations of at least one of those beautiful theaters called the Polion Majestic Theaters. But across the street, the grand plan is to have two of the new tallest buildings in downtown Bridgeport. Now, this is not going to happen in 3 months or in 6 months, but it's happening now, and it started. And then there'll be the two new, it'll be like a part of a new skyline for north end of downtown Bridgeport. So I'm excited about it. To get someone interested to make that kind of investment who has the financial wherewithal, clearly deliberate in what they're doing, because, you know, people have said, how come we haven't seen progress, visible progress? Well, we're starting to see it now.
Yeah, so, and it's exciting because I didn't know a lot about it. Tony, I'm not sure if you knew much about the Majestic Theater, but it really has a lot of great history. And my understanding from Tom Gill, who's one of the directors in the city, is that it was almost like Broadway here in Bridgeport. No, I mean, it was basically that same kind of experience before it shuttered down.
It was. I mean, it goes all the way back and beyond my time, although I'm old, to vaudeville. But in the early 1920s, this was one of the places that people used to go to. It was a kind of a cool thing, 1922. So we're recapturing history, but we're building it on it now in the present, as they say, for Bridgeport's future. So it's going to be a huge anchor on the other end of Main Street, where you have the amphitheater. If you see the steel going up on the amphitheater in the south end of Main Street, or, you know, past the arena, you're going to see this at the kind of north end of downtown Main Street. So it bookends, as we say. Theater ends, we should say.
Yeah, it's a great old theater, Mayor, and I hope they kind of keep that, you know, old feeling to it when it finally is completed and it's opened.
Well, they will. My mom, when I got reelected, she said to me, if you do anything, see if you can get the theaters going. That was the thing to do on Thursday nights in downtown Bridgeport when she was young.
Oh,
and
that's
so,
cool.
You know, as we fill that, we'll fill the sidewalks with the restaurants, with the comedy club and other good things that are going on downtown. So it's kind of cool stuff. Takes time. People have been very supportive, and I want to keep this and the other progress in the city of Bridgeport going, along with Steel Point and some of the other things we've talked about.
Only because, just really quick, because you brought it up, do we have any timelines, not only on the theater, but do we have a timeline with the amphitheater? Where are we at with that?
Amphitheater is looking at this spring.
So nice.
We're almost into November now, talking about the spring. He won't announce who the first act is going to be, but this is all kind of, you know, the revitalization of the arts. We're seeing young people get attracted to downtown. We want to give them something to kind of enjoy in Bridgeport, in downtown Bridgeport. So the amphitheater will be one. The other things, comedy club, and the Polion Majestic Theater, as it gets going, will be another. So we're excited about it. More work to do. You know, hanging on to the other things we talked about, cutting taxes and funding education, which we know are critical to the quality of life in the city. But this is a big piece of it, too.
Mayor, we've run out of time, but we thank you so much for taking a few minutes. We'll talk to you next week.
Thanks for the opportunity. All the best. Talk to you at 9:28 next week.
You got it, my friend.
Sometimes ordinary people do amazing things. Community Inspiration with Tony and Melissa in the morning. WICC 600.
For this week's Community Inspiration, we have a dear friend of mine who I actually stumbled upon when I moved to Milford. It's Linda Kilgore. She is the owner of the Miss Dallas Shop in Milford. Good morning. How are you, Linda?
Good morning, Melissa. Thank you for having me.
Thank you for being with us. So first of all, for anyone who's never been to your shop, what is it?
Miss Dallas Shop is a gift shop, Milford's little secret, a consignment shop, and a venue for 19 so far local artisans.
So a lot of people may be asking why I would put you on for Community Inspiration, because let's face it, I don't usually have just shop owners on to talk about their businesses, but I find you're different. I think that's one of the things that drew me towards you. When you go into Miss Dallas Shop, it's not just a shopping experience, it's a little bit more than that. Can you elaborate on what you think makes your shop a little bit different?
Absolutely. When you walk in our front door, you're walking into the door, and it feels like you're walking into a portal. And the portal is pure happiness and love. Jerry, my husband, and I try to naturally give everybody the sense of feeling that they've entered this portal as a stranger, but by the time we say hello and welcome, they have now become our friends. And we have so many people of so many ages that plop themselves in one of my two chairs from day one that say, Miss Dallas, I woke up cranky. I'm here to have you make me happy.
And you do it. And I don't really know what your secret is, but you do it. I mean, this is a woman who you have fresh cookies out in treats every day. You have given, you know, things away to people because you just want to make people fulfilled and happy.
From the time I was five, my mother, who I didn't want to leave to go to school, used to say to me with her little Italian accent, Linda, I know God created you to be generous to people and to make people happy. And you know what? It took me 63 years to realize that is exactly why God created me.
And he really did. I mean, for anyone who's never met this woman, you have to. She's completely touched my life. And
thank
every time
you.
I...
And Jerry just takes it and expands on it. He is so happy. He has blossomed so much in the 30 years we've been married. He's supportive, and if there's ever a day, and there are days that I come in a little tired and not myself, he comes in and he picks up the slack, and by the time you listen to his laughter, we're all laughing.
What are some of the things that stand out to you, Linda? If you were to think back, I mean, you've had this shop since February of 2015. What are some of the things or people, experiences, people that you've touched personally? What stands out to you?
Well, I first think of the people who have touched me. I learned what divine connections are all about in the last 3.5 years, and there's been many people that have come in here and were truly divine connections where they were meant to meet me and vice versa. Every week I create a prayer list of people that come in and tell me about sadness and illness, and I add them to my prayer list, and when other fellow friends come in that I know pray like I do, I ask them to put them on the list, and it's just a sense of feeling wonderful, and people know that other people care about them.
What's your secret? How do you do it? How do you come into work, even on a good or bad or an awful day, you still uplift people who come in?
Jerry and I have been through a lot in the last 9 years, and we went through an entire purging, and purging wasn't our choice. It was the economy. Our manufacturing business took a huge hit, and we were forced into purging. And prayer, believe in God, the belief of God that he's by my side every single day, gave me the strength and the belief in the faith, because faith is the opposite of worry. And I was a worry wart, but I am not anymore. Whenever I feel to be sad or worry, I pray. And I listen to inspirational people that help me to be that way as well.
Linda, known as the Miss Dallas owner of her shop, if people want to find you, where are you located? Where can they find you?
Okay, I'm in Milford, Connecticut at 16 Higgins Drive, which is off of Woodmont Road, exit 40 on I-95, same side as the Big Pilot gas station, heading towards West Haven. We're not on your typical retail street, so that's why it's exciting. When you come through the door, you don't know what to expect, and we have 4,000 square feet of a trillion beautiful items.
Yeah, and I can guarantee you, even if you just want to go in there to have your spirits uplifted, not only will that happen, but it's going to be very hard for you to walk out of there and not even take one thing. I know I go in there with the intention to just say hi, and I come out with 5 or 6 different things every single time. You have the best stuff, and you highlight local artists. It's so cool. Linda, thank you so much for being on our segment today.
Thank you, Melissa, for having me. Have a blessed day.
Thank you. You too. I wasn't even going to share Linda because, if I'm being honest, Tony, for the last year, I have hidden Linda's shop because she really does have the most wonderful things. And for the most part, they're local artisan items or they're things that are decades old, and she restores them basically. So for the last year, I've been using her shop as my place to go for special gifts that I know nobody else will give for Christmas or birthdays or whatever. But she really, I was just in there last week and I saw her, and there was a woman who walked in who was just, you could just see, completely just devastated by something going on. I'm not sure what. And I thought, how can I not put her on Community Inspiration? So, secret's out. It's pretty cool what she does.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I can't wait to get there myself. I want to look around and see what's going on in there. Wow, good stuff. I'm listening to Kim Komando here. She's talking about that game, Fourth Night or Fourth Right.
Fortnite.
Or whatever the hell it's called. I wouldn't know it if you smacked me in the face with it, okay? but she is right about one thing. You know, taking them to court and everything, it did this to my child. They won't obey me. They won't. And Kim had a good point. You know, how about, you know, getting the kid by the ear, throwing them into the shower, making them shower, making them do their homework, making them go to bed at a certain time. Myself, I would take it one step further. If it was my kid, I would smash the whole thing to bits with an axe.
Right, right.
That's what I would do. You know, right. that's something that, it's just absolutely ridiculous. You know, when we were growing up, I could, you know, my mother was the disciplinarian, okay? But my father would, we could get around him. A lot of times we could get around him and it was no problem. But my father at times would get that look in his eye and you would back off right away and say, okay, all right, all right, all right, I, you know, and I don't think we have that anymore. I really don't.
I think that there's too many parents who are afraid of their children, you know, and I have to be honest, I'm not going to name names, but I know my sister has told me that she has people she knows that have, at 18, 19, 20 years old, have considered before that, emanciating themselves from their parents? and I've said to her, you know, why? And she, you know, she said that, like, sometimes parents can be tough, but, you know, they don't trust us enough. They don't give us enough credit. You know, they think we're doing things wrong in college, all this stuff. I think, to be honest, that parents have enabled children too much to the point that they also don't think that they're as smart as they are until it's too late. What do I mean by that? I get so much criticism, Tony, for my 15-month-old that he already goes into timeout. He doesn't get TV time unless it's at dinner. And if we finished up dinner and he's been really good all day, he can watch one episode of Puppy Dog Pals, which is, might I add, 15 minutes long. He does not hold cell phones. That's a rule in our house. You cannot hold a cell phone. You are not going to know what a cell phone is. I mean, I've gone to the point where people have handed my son and said, hey, you want to play with this? And I go, no. Nope, you need to take that back. And I've had people, even my own friends, say, you're really a little too much for this 15-month-old. No, I'm not. Because he is so much smarter than we give him credit for. Just because he's a baby, Tony, does not mean he's not going to know how to swipe open a phone. And he's not going to know how to do things. He doesn't know how to break rules. He knows already. Are you kidding me? He knows how to do those things.
Of course he does. They're smarter than we ever were at that age.
Exactly. Sure. But I think that's completely gone out the window. I think too many parents just enable their kids. And then by the time they're 10, 11, 12 years old, and they do start to pick up these habits, not only they're afraid to approach them, but you're already too far deep. Your kids already have your number. You're done.
I've seen this. Kids have this in common, too. And you tell me if I'm wrong. They've got this in common. The phrase, hold on. That's the phrase.
Right.
Hold on. Now, I've seen this. I've seen this where a kid's mother, I'm not going to name names, but a kid's mother will say, hey, do me a favor. Go downstairs and get some water. We're getting ready to eat dinner. Bring up some bottles of water. Hold on. Second time. Go get the water.
Hold on a second.
Hold on. Okay, because they're doing something very important.
It's earth-shattering, actually, okay. Tony.
And
so
What ends up happening?
You end up going to get the water.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. That's what ends up happening. Mm-hmm. And it's just with that simple phrase, hold on.
Yeah, you've allowed it to even continue on.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't get it. You know what I mean?
No, my mom was never above the grabbing the ear and dragging you. I can remember when we were kids, I never really had that issue. My older brother had that issue a couple of times where it was, yeah, no, absolutely, I'll get to it. And, my mom didn't hesitate one second to just, you know, and my mom was never abusive, never, ever, ever put, you know, never hurt us. But she made sure it was, you know what, when your father and I put a roof over your head, a beautiful meal in front of you. We give you clean clothes. We, you know, we provide everything for you. I'll be damned if you don't do what we ask you to do. And that's just not here anymore. That's just that. I mean, we learned that, gosh, when we were little kids and even at 30, when my mom says or I see my mom struggling, she doesn't even have to say anything. I will beat her to the punchline now because it's been ingrained in me for the last 29 years of my life.
But these kids, they don't understand. I have a friend. He's a great guy. He's got a daughter. But these are the things that come out of her mouth.
Mm-hmm.
He said to her one day, listen, you're whatever you are, 30 years old or whatever. you got to start paying some rent here at the house. She turned around and said, I can't believe that you're going to make me pay rent to live in my own house.
Oh, I didn't realize you bought the house.
Oh, my God.
My apologies.
It's just so, and every time I hear it, I make him tell the story so I can laugh.
Yeah.
It's just, you know, but he's one step ahead of me because my kids never paid anything. The nominees for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame class of 2020 have been announced. That there are 16 of them, and for once, they stuck to mostly mainstream candidates. I agree with a lot of them. I disagree with some. Pat Benatar, absolutely. Dave Matthews, yeah, I guess so. Depeche Mode, what? The Doobie Brothers, yes. Whitney Houston, absolutely. Judas Priest, that's noise to me. Kraftwerk, who is that? MC5, who is that? Motorhead, yeah, okay. Nine Inch Nails, noise. Notorious Big, B.I.G., okay. And Rufus featuring Chaka Khan. Also, Todd Rundgren, Soundgarden, T-Rex, and Thin Lizzy. So there you go. Now, Pat Benatar has been around forever. She's been around for 35 years. How long are you going to make this woman wait for this honor? All right. Whitney Houston, how long are you going to make her wait for this honor? Okay, I mean, come on.
How long do they typically wait, Tom?
Well, that's just it. There's no rhyme or reason to it.
Really?
I mean, there are some people who have been eligible for years, and they don't get in, or they make them wait, you know?
It kind of reminds me of, like, the Baseball Hall of Fame. Sometimes you see players that sit for years, and then others, it's within a five-year range of them retiring, it seems like.
But a lot of times, with the Baseball Hall of Fame, you treat the sports writers lousy, they're going to make you wait. It's the sports writers that get you in there. I don't know what the criteria is for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but people like Pat Benatar, are you kidding? What more does she have to do?
Right. Well, and some of those names, it's just a funny combination. So I know, you know, Dave Matthews is kind of questionable for you. Dave Matthews, I could completely see being there, but it's just interesting to throw him in with somebody like Notorious B.I.G. I mean, Biggie Smalls was a big deal, you know, years and years, you know, I think years ago, really. I mean, he was big in the 90s for sure. Whitney Houston goes without saying. It's just an interesting combination of people, to be honest, that they're throwing in together. And why now? You know, because Dave Matthews is still pretty relevant. I mean, he's not as big as he was in the early 2000s, but he's still performing. He's still going on tour. But you have people like Whitney Houston and Biggie Smalls, who they've been gone for years, you know, for a while now. Whitney, not so much, but they've been gone for a couple of years at least. And I'm just surprised that it's such an odd combination of people, Tony. That's what kind of threw me off about
it. Well, yeah, it is. It is an odd combination, but, you know, you call it the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but it rock stars get in, folk people get in, you know,
Notorious B.I.G., he's a rapper.
Yeah, it's very eclectic. It really, really is. But nonetheless, there are some people that I think have earned their stripes, and how long are you going to make them wait? You know,
yeah.
I mean, come on, let's be real. Now, to be eligible, you have to have a single or an album released in 1994 or earlier.
Okay.
The final class will be announced in January. Usually six or seven acts are inducted, and the ceremony will happen in Cleveland on March the 2nd. I remember a couple of years ago, Joan Jett was inducted into the Hall of Fame, and Miley Cyrus was the one that inducted her. And Miley Cyrus, I'm watching, I couldn't believe what I would, because I'm convinced Miley Cyrus is what's wrong with the United States of America. Okay, she comes on, and her introduction was just laced with profanity. Laced with profanity. She used the F word at least 18 or 19 times, okay?
Jeez.
And I said to myself, I says, oh, man, if she's acting like this, what's Joan Jett going to be like? Joan Jett got up there. She couldn't have been any more humble. She started to cry. She was so, so honored to be inducted. She was like a little mouse. And I figured she was going to be, you know, uproarious and everything, just like Miley was. But she wasn't. She was very, very appreciative and very emotional about the whole thing. So I don't know. It's a weird thing. You
this
know?
Might be a foolish question, Tony, because I always find it really intriguing. But is there a cap? Is there a certain amount of people they can accept, or could they technically accept everyone you just listed?
I think they can accept them all if they want.
Oh, they could.
Oh, sure. I believe so. I don't know what criteria is for the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but they said at least 6 or 7 acts will be inducted when it happens on May the 2nd. I hope it's Pat Benatar. I hope it's Whitney Houston and the Doobie Brothers, to say the very, very least.
Mm-hmm.
You know, everybody else, whatever, do what you want to do. But there are certain people that should be in there, you know, and there are certain people that are in there that you got in because somebody was getting mad. For example, the Beatles are inducted in the Hall of Fame as a group.
Mm-hmm.
And then John, Paul, and George are in there as solo artists.
Okay.
Then they turned around and they inducted Ringo only because Paul went to the board and yelled at them and said, "What are you doing? What are you doing? Put Ringo in." And I think, I think Paul said, "You know, if you don't put him in, then don't expect me for any more of these inductions."
Really?
Yeah, he was really mad.
I mean, I think that's pretty honorable that he stuck up for his band member. That's pretty cool that he did that.
But it was only right, you know, come on.
Right, yeah. I mean, how do you do 3 out of 4 of the Beatles?
Exactly. You know, makes absolutely no sense. There's a new report out of Forbes shows that more and more engaged couples are taking out loans to pay for their weddings. Okay. I mean, do you want me to tell you my opinion on this? Do you want me to hold back on this? What do you want me to do?
You have to be you, Tony. It's our show, so you gotta say what you're thinking. Right. I mean, I already know my thoughts. We're pretty in line with each other, to be honest. So, no, go for it. Tell us what you think.
Here's what I say. You plan the wedding that you can afford. Mm-hmm. You don't go into debt for a 5-hour event that no one's going to remember 10 minutes after it's over, all right? It's stupid and it's irresponsible, all right? You have to plan for things like kids. You have to plan for a home, for college, for retirement, not for a party for people who wouldn't spit on you if you were on fire. I mean, that's the way that I look at it. You know what I'm saying? Yeah, there's a handful of people there that are going to be in your life forever and you're going to love each other and all of that. Father's knows best thing that you see on TV. 99% of the people that are there, you're never going to see again. And if you came to them sincerely and said, "Hey, I need help," then that'll be followed by the slamming of the door in your face.
Okay, so here's the watered down version, because Tony is the, you know, grit and raw. So here's my version. I agree to an extent. I do think that it's ridiculous that people are going broke over a wedding, because when you essentially get down to the nitty gritty of it, it's supposed to be this amazing, union of two people. That's what a wedding is supposed to be about. I think it's become too much glitz and glamour. I don't feel it's, you know, that people have lost sight of why they want to have a nice wedding. Interestingly, in this report, I thought the biggest thing was going to be the dress. You watch these TV shows of people having, you know, $10,000 dresses and too much with flowers and all that. But surprisingly, the majority of the money that they're using this for is actually the entertainment aspect, things like photo booths or open bars, whatever the case may be. But I do feel it is ridiculous to spend, it looks like you're spending thousands extra just to make sure that you're entertaining people. But really, if you're inviting people, I know for our own matrimony, we had a small group. It was people who are still in our lives. It was just family and our closest friends. And I know that those people will be there. And they didn't care if we had a wedding in the backyard, if we had it in a cardboard box, for crying out loud. So I do think that there's way too much emphasis on how do we entertain people, when really the essential reason for getting married is so that people can celebrate two people getting married. So I think that's gotten lost a lot. Do I think it's worth taking a loan out? Absolutely not. I never had to take a loan out. We paid off our wedding no problem in the timeline that we booked the venue. In fact, Tony, I was going to tell you this story at breakfast this morning. I met a woman who cut my hair last week, and she said she purposely booked a place in January because the prices were so much lower for a venue she and her husband really wanted to go to. And she said it was completely affordable, and I think it just takes looking at some compromises, if you will. She's like, "Yeah, I'm getting married in the dead of winter, but I'm where I want to be." And it's kind of to the point you were saying, afford what you can afford and don't break the bank over a wedding. It's foolish.
It's stupid. It's stupid.
See, that's the watered down version.
Downright stupid. All right, that's the way that I feel about it. But we want to know how you feel. Would you take out a loan to have your dream wedding? That's the question of the day. Now, we talked a little bit about this early this morning, and I think that it's insane to start out your life with your significant other already behind the eight ball. That's my opinion.
I agree. Yep,
and,
I think so too.
But some people feel that they want that dream wedding. They want that that great time. And quite honestly, people forget about it 10 minutes after they walk out the door. Okay, so
I don't know if it's that dramatic, but I do think that it's not worth going into debt. I don't think that I think it's sad, Tony, honestly, from this Forbes article that the majority of the money that people are finding they're behind the eight ball with is because they want to entertain their guests. I'm sorry, but if you're inviting people who don't just want to go and support you and love you and just clap for you when you finally say I do, then you shouldn't be inviting them to your wedding, quite frankly, because if you're spending all this money to just give people a great time, that's really not what the wedding is about.
Well, we went to a wedding last year. My nephew got married, and we were waiting to go into the catering hall to sit down, you know. So my wife is there with my sister-in-law and a couple of other people. They got up from the waiting room that we were in, and they had to use the bathroom. Well, my son's girlfriend, she stayed with me. We were just sitting there on a couch outside, and we were talking, and she turns around and she says, I hate weddings. I hate them. And I says, well, haven't you been planning this type of a thing since you were a little girl? No, no. I says, well, what do you plan on? I mean, they never talked about marriage, her and my son. I said, but if you plan on marrying each other, what do you want to do?
Yeah.
She says, you know what I really want to do is get married, like at City Hall.
Right.
And then the next day, I would like to go with my immediate family. She says, I'd like to go to a Yankee game. And that's the way I'd like to celebrate.
She sounds amazing.
And I says, all right, I'll tell you what. If you keep it like that, I says, I'll buy the tickets and I'll buy the hot dogs.
Wow.
I says, you know, that's great.
Your son better put a ring on it. that's an awesome future daughter-in-law, possibly.
She really is the type of girl that really doesn't need all the frills and
the bells
like
and
that.
Whistles. And I have to say, though, Tony, it doesn't sound like a lot of our listeners want the bells and whistles either, to be honest. Let's read some of these comments.
All right, like Wilfredo, this is just insane. Save your money to buy a home or save for college instead. Wilfredo, if I wasn't married, I'd marry you.
And Sarah said weddings have become too much, way too much. She's actually planning her wedding right now, and she says, honestly, a cheap wedding is $10,000. That's a crazy price. I understand taking out a loan, but starting off your marriage in debt just doesn't seem like it's worth it. There are options to try and keep your costs low. I agree. I kept my costs way low for our wedding and nobody noticed the difference.
Carol said, yes, way too much. What are we teaching our children? Mm-hmm. Perhaps current TV programs showing fancy weddings and elegant designer dresses give girls unrealistic dreams to fulfill. And I remember when I was in a wedding party, we would go to a restaurant, we'd have spaghetti, and, you know, we'd play cards or what. Sometimes they'd get up a stripper or whatever the case. But we stayed in town.
Right.
And you were home.
It wasn't a big to-do.
Now, there's like a whole thing where...
Oh, my gosh. Bachelor weekend cruises.
Yeah.
What?
Yeah. You're going to Vegas for the weekend. It's, please, give me a break.
Oh, it's insane. And I think Carol makes a great point. I'm going to be honest right here. So I already got married, obviously, but I had to unfollow the page on Instagram, Disney Weddings, because I look at some of these weddings in the dresses and their pictures in front of the Magic Kingdom castle. And I think to myself, this is ludicrous. And I don't even want to support telling people that they need to spend thousands and thousands of dollars to do this. It's ridiculous. Brenda said, yes, weddings are becoming too much. I've seen parents take out a second mortgage to pay for weddings. I'd rather put a down payment on a house. You're paying the most of your money on the venue, and most people are going to complain about something anyways. So what happened to simple and elegant with the ones closest to you? Good question.
There you go. Anthony, I don't really like going to weddings because it's so much and overdone. That's true, Anthony.
Yeah, Gina said jeans and t-shirts. That was the best wedding I ever had, the only wedding I've ever had. It cost less than $200 for the entire day. And hey, we're still together. Beautiful.
There you go. Deborah says, don't buy anything unless you can afford it. Something I learned from my father-in-law when I got married 35 years ago. He was a very wise man. Hopefully he's still with you, Deborah.